Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of Giant Mess, the super sloppy sports entertainment talk show that covers Giants football, Mets baseball, movies, television, and a whole lot more. So it's by Giant Mess. It's me, the real Cinch Neil Lynch. On today's episode, we're going to be talking a little bit about a bunch of movies. I got to watch a bunch of movies. Dune Part 2 in theaters. Saw that. Blackberry. Caught that on Hulu. And then Aquaman Lost Kingdom on Disney Plus. No. Idiot. Ha! HBO Max. Finished up Foundation Season 2. So we'll do a little compare and contrast there with Season 1. So without further ado, let's get it started up in hell. I watched Blackberry. Was it last Monday? Not this previous Monday. Last Monday. And it's the movie starts off. It's with Glenn Howerton and the guy from How to Train Your Dragon and Goon. And she's out of my league. I always forget his name. It sucks because I actually met him in person. He seems like a cool dude. Great movie. It's great reviews and ratings from both audiences and critics. I guess I would like to do a full review at some point, but it starts off with this quote from Arthur C. Clarke, who I didn't recognize this was Arthur C. Clarke as this clip was happening, but I was like, it was about technology and commuting. This is what basically kicks off the movie for Blackberry. Did not know that Arthur C. Clarke is a sci-fi writer. He's written a bunch of like well-known books. Let's see if I can pull it up. 2001: A Space Odyssey. He's written a lot of books, but not a lot that I recognize. Apparently, there's like a friggin' ton of Odyssey books. He's written a shit ton of books. Oh my god, dude. I don't recognize a lot of these books, but he did write 2001: A Space Odyssey. So, but the way that the clip is presented, you would think that like, he also wrote some short stories. Short stories? No, I don't recognize any of those. Movies and shows. Oh, I guess they did make a bunch of movies and shows from these books. I don't recognize many of them at all. Anyway, so in the clip, I don't think they ever identify that it is Arthur C. Clarke and that he's a sci-fi writer. The way that he looks and behaves and talks, it's like, oh, this guy works, he is a scientist. And he works in the field and da da da. And I think he might actually be a scientist too. fucking A, dude. A futurist, an inventor, an undersea explorer, and TV host. Yeah. So, I mean, I didn't recognize it was Arthur C. Clarke. They didn't say it was Arthur C. Clarke in the clip, I don't think. But it comes across as a guy who's like, oh, this guy knows what he's talking about. It's backed by science, right? That kind of thing. And it made me laugh. I'll give you the quote and then I'll give you why it's so goddamn funny. Quote, I'm thinking of the incredible breakthrough which has been made possible by developments in communications, particularly the transistor and above all, the communications satellite. These things will make possible a world in which we can be in instant contact with each other wherever we may be. It will be possible in that age, perhaps only 50 years from now. Now, pause. This is from 1964, this clip. Add 50 years, it's 2014. We are currently in the year 2024, FYI. Unpause. It will be possible in that age, perhaps only 50 years from now, 2014, for a man to conduct his business from Tahiti or Bali just as well he could from London. Just as well as he could from London. In fact, if it provides worthwhile, almost any executive skill, any administrative skill, even any physical skill, could be made independent of distance. When that time comes, the whole world will have shrunk to a point and the traditional role of the city as a meeting place for man would have ceased to make any sense. In fact, men will no longer commute, they will communicate. That day, I had to commute to the office in New York in the year 2024. For a job that I can do from home, and I do from home multiple days a week, my commute took me over 2 hours, and I communicated with coworkers at the office in the same exact manner as I do when I'm working from home, over Slack and an email and Zoom. I had to laugh because I was just like, this guy predicted this fucking in 1964, that, and it, essentially ended up happening in 2020, 2021, most 2022, where it's like we were all working remotely. And I remember there was even like a clip on X, Twitter, whatever, very short clip where it's like it basically had like a guy who's like the executive boss, C-level suite type executive type guy talking to his workers over Zoom on 2020. And then another one in 2021 and another one in 2022, where in 2020 he's very sympathetic and like he feels for his workers and is hopeful and is encouraging that we can get through this. And then 2021, it was like, all right, well, you know, maybe not so much. In 2022 is like, get back to the office right now. So it was like, I don't know. I guess there are some companies out there where employees really do just take wild advantage of that, the remote work policy, and they have to rein it in. This is just not one of those jobs. And considering that the workforce is spread out over the country and dispersed like that, it's just like we have to communicate through these means anyway. And then my internet went down. So it was like, ah, shit. Internet didn't go down at the office, even though it can. So that was, it was like kind of bittersweet irony, you know, because my train was delayed 30 minutes in the morning, where it's like, get on the train, express to Newark, and then we get to Secaucus, and we're just hanging out there for a good half hour because something caught on fire. I don't know, track is down or something. And then I get to the subway, I'm waiting at on the A Express North bound line, and I'm seeing every single other friggin' subway, even A's going the other way, come and go for a good 20-25 minutes. Like, what the actual fuck? That A train going north is never the, it's just like it's supposed to be 5 minutes apart, especially like at the rush hour peak times, and it's never 5 minutes apart ever. So I think I gotta become a C boy again. Take that C, sweet C. But, you know, it's like it took me fucking 2+ hours to get the goddamn work. And then the way back sucked as well. There was a train, like, I think it was maybe not that day, but maybe the next day the train was canceled. And so I had to get on another train, and that next train was not an express like the first train that was canceled. And so, you know, I ended up getting home at like way late. Like, you know, I leave the office at 5:35, 5:40 so I can catch that 6:01. I didn't get home till like 7:30 something. And then I have to cook dinner. So it was like, that's just the fact that this dude said that. And I was going through hell. I was just like, motherfucker. Like, this is, seems like a smart dude, a futurist, and he gets it. So why can't everyone else? But yeah, I wouldn't, I mean, I guess remote jobs are never going to fully go away. I still see them pop up here and there, but it's all hybrid and in office. Because these companies spend outrageous amounts, most of the companies have outrageous amounts of money invested in these long-term contract leases or whatever. You know, I'm pretty sure that's how they cut a deal is like, yeah, we're going to be here for the next 30 years. And then the pandemic hits in year five and you're like, ah, shit. We're never going to get people back in the office. You know, we had someone visiting from the company, another location who works for the company, come and visit. And she was like talking on the phone. I just heard her say, yeah, like there's like no one here. There's like two or three other people here. There's just empty desks everywhere. So I don't know. I don't like, they keep saying too, they address it in every all hands meeting. Like, hey, we believe that hybrid works, but they have zero evidence to indicate that. There's no like, because we're doing hybrid, X amount up 80%, or, you know, there's nothing that, it doesn't sound too convincing. It's just like, it just proves that we work better together. And it's like, all right, sure. Why not? I ended up seeing Dune Part 2 on Friday, and it was my immediate reaction as soon as it ended was, that's the best movie I've ever seen in my life. And then I walked it back a little bit, and I was like, okay, that was one of the best movies I've ever seen. And I told people right away, you know, I was like, you like, this is amazing. And I stand by that even now. It's now been 1, 2, 3 days later, 4 days later, and I still stand by it. One of the best movies ever made. One of the best movies I've ever seen. And I know people have said this. I know Dave Portnoy said this. I think a lot of people at Barstool have said it, but yeah, it's just better than Star Wars. And knowing now, which I didn't necessarily know at the time, but I feel like a fool for not knowing it, that Dune, because it was written by Frank Herbert and it came out in 64, 65, was the inspiration for Star Wars. You know, because George Lucas doesn't write the script until the 70s something. And, you know, seeing what happens in Dune Part 2 and knowing what happened in Star Wars, I was just like, huh. And at the time, and it still didn't affect my opinion of the movie. I wasn't like, oh, they're ripping off Star Wars. It was like, it felt different, looked different. And I mean, Dune 1, I don't know if I can find the tweet, but I definitely was like, Dune is one of the best sci-fi movies of the 21st century, I think is what I said. X gonna give it to you. Come on, dude. Nope, nope, nope. All right. Well, I think at the time, and Dune 1 was one of those movies that came out during the pandemic when I think people were not as willing to go to the movie theater. I don't think I was willing to go to the movie theater just yet. I ended up going to the movie theater again December of 21. But I think this came out in over the summer of 2021 or the fall of 2021. So I did not go to the movie theater to see it. I saw it at home like I think a lot of people did. And so I think that's maybe... I don't feel like it got a lot of buzz, but I thought at the time, well, I said it, one of the best movies of the 21st century, one of the best sci-fi movies of the 21st century. And then I rewatched it before going to see part two. And I was like, damn, that's better than I remember. That could be one of the best movies I've ever seen. And then I ended up seeing Dune part two. And I was like, that is officially one of the best, not just sci-fi movies, one of the best movies I've ever seen. So close to being on par with Dark Knight. Like very close. Like if someone, I mean, I imagine if I were in my 20s and I was a little bit more social than I am now, where it's like I have friends asking me to do things, you know, that kind of thing, I would see it probably two more times in the theater. It was like, wait, you haven't seen it? Like and that could happen now. If someone comes up to me and goes, oh, I heard Dune Part 2 is good, I haven't seen it yet, I'd be like, let's go see it. I'll pay. Like we're going to IMAX. I didn't see it in IMAX. I know I should, but it's kind of few and far between where I am, I think. So I have a movie theater right here. So I just went and saw it there, but definitely one of the best movies I've ever seen. I could do a full review of it and I probably will, but I will say like, Austin Butler, badass, like he's fucking yoked in this movie, like completely shaved head. He's got like, I think black teeth or something like that. Just really cut up, like physically muscular and shredded and just ruthless in the movie. And despite the movie being like 3 hours long, 3+ hours long, I could have used more of everything, you know, like so Austin Butler plays Fade Rautha, who's one of the nephews of the Baron Harkonnen. Who kind of is a Jabba the Hutt type character, very, very big, fat, like can't walk on his own and needs like these two things to kind of train, like move him around and like keep him above ground so they can move him. And like the Baron's great. I mean, the Baron we saw in Dune Part 1, like Fade Rautha wasn't in Part 1. What was it? Riban, who's played by David. Professional wrestler, Barikwa, but Batista, Dave Batista. So he was in part one and he continues in part two. And you can see he's just like a hothead who doesn't really get much accomplished. And then you have Fade Rautha, his brother. Oh, I didn't know Raban's first name was Beast. That's fucking cool. And it's played by Batista, who's just physically imposing. But like Austin Butler kind of steals the show. They had a few scenes where he's really like, they do a fantastic job of showing you, okay, this guy is not to be trifled with, not to be fucked with. Like this guy is pure psychotic. But you even like when they did put his skills on display, I felt like it wasn't grand scale enough. Like that in the arena when he's, when they have the three last of the Atreides, I was like, and they were saying, oh, the last of the Atreides were drugged. So it's an it's so that Fade Rautha will win handedly. So I'm like, that doesn't really showcase his badassery, right? It's like, it's tipped in his favor, so it's easier for him, like, da da da. But I do like how they're like, well, that third one isn't, I don't think that third one's drugged, and that dude put up a good fight. And I was worried that we weren't going to, like, in that final fight between him and Paul Atreides, it was not going to be, you would feel like, damn, I wanted more. But like, that was a fucking awesome fight. And I like that there wasn't music. It was like, we're just going to let you hear the thumps and the bumps and the clangs of the knives and the sweat and the grunts. Like, I love that they went that route with it. Rebecca Ferguson as Jessica was just like, you know, in part one, it's like, she's kind of timid and scared of what's happening, and she fears and cares for her son Paul, and is worrisome about the future. Part two, she also becomes like this crazy mega badass, and she is fucking scary, dude. Like when she uses the voice and gets pissed, it's like, whoa, was that special effects? Is that how your face really looks? Whoa, when you're mad, whoa. Josh Brolin was awesome as always. Florence Pugh, pew, 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 was really great. Princess Irulan. So what to, I don't know why I did this, but I my daughter's school has like parent-teacher conferences coming up. And you have to sign up through this website called Sign Up Genius. And so you register, and then it like gives you all these offers. And one of the offers was 30 days free trial of Audible. I was like, all right, whatever. So I'm looking through the catalog and I see like Dune is there. And I was like, all right, this will be like, I'll watch the movie part one, and then I'll like listen. I'll listen to the book while I'm at work to pass the time. It feels like that'll get me back up to speed, you know, because you kind of forget things because it's not as prevalent and prominent as the Star Wars franchise is on Disney Plus. You know, it feels. I also like, to be honest, I feel like I just fucking forgot that this movie was coming out this year, and. It coming out March 1st was a mind fuck as well. Cause it's like, this feels like a huge blockbuster movie. Part one, though, you know, obviously the revenue wasn't box office where they had hoped. It's because we're in the pandemic. If we weren't in a pandemic, who knows how well it would have done. So that was kind of under the radar, even though people loved it, especially me and most people I talked to. And then part two is just like March 1st. It was like, whoa. I feel like there was like, other than, I guess there was a trailer for it during the Super Bowl. But even then, it didn't even hit me that it's like March 1st was the release date. So it kind of snuck up on me. But I ended up listening to the books 1 through 3, the trilogy of Dune books, which was 40 hours. So it was literally like my entire work week. I had to listen to this. And I got to say, yikes. Like, I almost gave up towards the end because it was just, it was getting absurd. Like, essentially, the way Audible has set up this, I don't know if this is just Audible specific or if this is just the audiobook across the board. But so they have a narrator, but then they also have voice actors. And so there's certain chapters where they'll have the voice actors acting everything out, and they'll have sound effects and a score and music. And it's like, this is pretty cool. My guess is that the budget wasn't enough to do that the entire 40 hours of audio recording, because they would switch, which I guess might also be a tactic or strategy where it's like, well, people are going to get like, they're going to get bored, or like, we need to switch it up to keep them paying attention. I don't know. I think it's a budgetary thing, because like whenever they went from the voice actors, which they were decent, they were okay, they would go to this narrator. And if it's a chapter where it's no dialogue, that was okay. But if there is dialogue, this narrator had to then do the voices. He would do the voices of the male characters and the female characters. The female characters that he did were so egregious. Unreal. Unreal. Like, hello, mother. I think we should go down to the with the Fremen. It's just like, oh my God, bro. Like, oof. So yeah, that was painful. And even in the reviews, people are like, they're giving it high marks, but it's like, great story, awful performances, like awful recording. Like, even the voice actors, when they had just the voice actors acting it out with the sound effects and the score, even they were just like, this is like, oof. Luckily, we didn't have any of that in the movie. Yeah, Stellan Skarsgård was awesome as Baron Harkonnen. Oh, that was Lea Seydoux as Lady Margot Fenring. Interesting. And then Javier Bardem as Stilgar. He was cool. He brought some of the comic relief, I guess. There were a couple of his quotes where it was like, got a couple chuckles and laughs. Zendaya as Chani. She was pretty decent. You know, I don't know that I was necessarily blown away. Like, Timothy Chalamet has all of my respect. Like, I liked him in part one. I was like, I don't know how we're going to get behind this guy as like the protagonist, as like this main character who's going to fight through obstacles, get through challenges, and who's going to earn the respect of, like, I was just like, I just don't see it. I always thought of him as this like small, scrawny, tiny dude. He's like 6'1". He's a tall dude. And he's just, I don't want to say slight, but he's lean. And in this part two, you get a better sense of his physicality. I feel like in part one, they were hiding it, or they weren't like showcasing it too much. Like, we saw that fight scene with Gurney, where Gurney's training him in part one. You're like, you get a sense of his abilities and his skills, you know, where his weaknesses are. But that didn't necessarily scream like, oh, this is a fucking awesome hero that should be revered. This movie, part two, it was just like, okay, now we get to see him be a lot more physical. We get to see him show off his abilities physically, not just fighting, but running, dodging, jumping, like everything he did. You could see, like, it was impressive. And on top of that, the fact that I don't know if they did this, and I mean, I assume my assumption is, in thinking about it rationally, that they probably altered it or edited his voice or used ADR or something, some kind of effect to make his voice sound much more not harsh, not baritone, but just full and strong and rich and intimidating and mean and ferocious. Like, they did something. Like, after he drinks the water of life, spoiler, like, and he's now trying to lead everyone into this, rally everyone. And they're like, now people are almost like turning against him because of this new way he's approaching everyone. Whereas before it was like, I'm just want to be one of the guys and earn your respect and work alongside with you. And then all of a sudden he's now like, I'm taking the lead now. Follow me, motherfucker. Like, that was a badass scene. And I feel like that's when I fully was on board with him. Like, not that I mean, I was like, as the movie's going on, it was just like the needle's moving in the right direction in terms of like believing in him to be that guy. Even like Austin Butler, like, you see him in Elvis and you're like, ah, this is just a heartthrob. Yeah, this is like a guy that you're not going to like want to take in a fight, you know, meaning like you're not going to pick him to be your champion and to throw into the ring. And then you see him in this movie and you're like, holy shit, you know? So the two of them, I was really impressed with Austin Butler and Timothy Chalamet, because I mean, it was just like, and I would like to have seen more of Fade Rautha. Just so like, I think I would have might have wanted to see Beast the Raban a little bit more. Florence Pugh, as I mentioned, is so fucking cool. And if she were in every movie for the rest of all time, I would very much appreciate it. She plays the Emperor's daughter, and this is where the movie, like, I scored it a 10 out of 10 on IMDb, mostly because you can't do You can't do like 9 point whatever. But I was like, in my head, this is above, this is definitely not closer to a 9. It's closer to a 10. So let's give it a 10 out of 10. And I feel like even if you look on IMDb, it's like, or sorry, Rotten Tomatoes, they're in the 90s. Let's do a quick look. 94% of critics give it a favorable review. 95% of audience give it a favorable review. So, you know, 8.4 out of 10. Top critics are only 89% of top critics give it a favorable review with a 7.6 out of 10. Feels low. All critics, 8.4 out of 10. Feels low. Verified audience, 4.7 out of 5. Hell yeah. Right on board with y'all. And then all audience right there too, 47 out of 5. 4.7 out of 5. So I agree with the audience. And the critics are being weird. And like, if I had to pick something nitpicking, and other people have mentioned this, Christopher Walken as the Emperor is like a wild move, an absolutely wild casting decision. All respect to Christopher Walken. I love the guy. The world loves the guy, just not in this role. It just didn't work because he does not come across as I think they wanted him to come across in that scheming, plotting, conniving, you know, next level thinking, a genius. Like, it, none of that crossed my mind. All I could think about was, why the fuck is Christopher Walken the Emperor right now? Like, he doesn't strike fear into anyone. And he wasn't impressing me with any kind of, like, the way that he delivered, presented. It just, as El Presidente said, Dave Portnoy and Boston Sports, almost ruined the movie. It really came close to derailing the movie, which was nuts. Because ultimately, he just, I don't know. So it would be interesting to hear what they were hoping for, or you know, what they thought going into that, you know, with that decision. I mean, it's a star-studded cast, you know, and I didn't even get to Anya Taylor-Joy, who you're probably, if they do make a third one, which I don't know how they can't make a third one. You'll see more of Anya Taylor-Joy, but like, that, we're going to look back on this movie and be like, look at this goddamn cast. Chalamet's A-list star, Rebecca Ferguson, essentially is in enough blockbusters now where I think you can consider her an A-lister. Javier Bardem, A-lister. Austin Butler, like emerging, he's the A-list of the emerging talent, a generation of talent that's coming up, you know, along with Florence Pugh, A-list. Bautista, I mean, people ridiculed him, but, you know, he's had a bunch of performances, especially that one performance in M. Night Shyamalan's movie that recently came out that I saw in theaters that I thought was cool. Can't remember the name of it, but he gave a solid performance there. And Josh Brolin, I mean, like, Stellan Skarsgård was so great as Baron Harkonnen. People are going to look back on this cast and be like, holy shit, like, what a cast. And then you have Christopher Walken as the Emperor. Ooh, boy. It almost turned into like an SNL skit. Does that make sense? Like, all of a sudden I was like, my brain just went to Saturday Night Live. I was like, what's happening? Are we watching an SNL skit? Like, this seems so out of left field. This seems like something that would happen in a sketch, comedy sketch. Like, we're going to have this really serious, dramatic type cast that's delivering like powerful, strong, emotional performances, and then we're gonna throw Christopher Walken in. He's gonna be like, oh no, the houses, they must agree. Like, it's just like, yay. So that's really the only, I guess, nitpicking that I have there. There were some other nitpicks that people had, you know, it's but I, overall, I mean, I like, as close to perfect as you can get. And that makes me wonder, but I guess it's because it's my wheelhouse, meaning like, this is my sweet spot. This is what I love. This is what I crave. This is what I, you know, constantly consume. And I'm a huge fan of this genre. So maybe that's why I am so flabbergasted, but like, the March 1st release date just doesn't compute for me. Like, the fact that you it just feels like a blockbuster. A huge blockbuster. So why not release it in June or July? Because I mean, as far as the summer movies that I've seen come across my desk, I don't see anything that would outperform this just yet. other than maybe Deadpool and Wolverine. Deadpool 3 is definitely, that's a winner, a sure thing. But like, other than that, I don't know. Maybe I'm completely missing the lineup for the summer, but like, and I think it did well at the box office. I think it surpassed expectations at the box office. Now, is it going to do a billion? Man, I kind of want to take that bet. I think it's, you know, even though it exceeded expectations, it's not exactly like, I think it 187 million or something like that. It's like 80 something domestically, which is considered a success these days. Can it get to a billy? That'd be tough. And as Robbie Fox mentioned with Barstool, because it's not necessarily kid friendly, family friendly. So like, this is why you have studio executives sticking their snout into a lot of creative projects, because they're like, listen, we have the formula. We know the formula. We know the math on this. To get to a billion, you either have to go something that is unique, a la Deadpool, which was R-rated superhero movie, comedy, bloody, etc., or like a Black Panther, where it's like, we're finally giving you the or Barbie, where it's like representation is really driving the audience to the theaters. You know, with Black Panther and Barbie, it's like parents can feel good about taking their kids to that movie. Do parents feel like they can take their movie, their kids to see Dune? Like, I'm talking about like 7, 8, 9, 10-ish year olds. Maybe not. Probably not. So it's that, whereas Star Wars had that kind of appeal to kids, I don't know that Dune necessarily does just yet. I still have confidence, though. Like, when we get to the end of 2024, it could be close to a billy. I hope so. They'd be foolish to not make a third one. I don't know what's going on in the third one, because I listened to the books and I was just like, feels like all the action came in part two. It almost feels like it's lining up with what that original Star Wars trilogy was, where it's like the first one was good, New Hope was good, Empire Strikes Back was the best of the three, and then you have Return of the Jedi, which was kind of like, decent end, but not as good as the first two. Is that what's going to happen with part three? Kind of hope not, but from what I've heard with the Dune books that I listened to, I didn't get the same sense that there was going to be the level of action that part two had. So I don't know. But then again, a lot of the books didn't have a lot of the action that we're seeing in the movies now. Like, I think Denis Villeneuve and his team have really done a incredible job of adapting the source material and saying like, listen, there's a lot of world to be had here. And Frank Herbert really just scratched the surface. As crazy as that sounds, like, he didn't really delve into a lot of what the physicality of it all, like the ships, the gadgets, the technology, the fighting, it was more about the, in the books, it was more about the dialogue driven, the political side of things, whereas the movies were able to expound on that. So I know I'm biased, but like, how this can't be in the running for best picture for 2024 is beyond me. 2024 better bring the fucking heat for that not to happen. Cause I think we covered most anticipated movies, maybe not for 2024, maybe not. And it's hard to see this not getting serious consideration. Dune Part 2. So I can't recommend it enough. Like, it's just fucking awesome. So, and then I watched Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom last night, and oh boy. I wonder if I can bring that up. I was trying to look at the trivia before I started the program tonight, because it must be chock full of just crazy shit, because I don't know the timeline on this, but I would believe it almost felt like they found out in the middle of filming that this was, that like James Gunn was taking over and that he's like scrapping everything. But it just feels like they got that news like halfway through filming, or like right as they started filming, because there are a bunch of scenes where You're like, whoa, okay, they're just not taking this seriously. And like, they just don't give a fuck. And I'm completely speculating and just making this up. But in my head, I envision like the director, like James Wan or one of his assistant directors or someone, just he's like, all right, gather around, everyone, gather around. Hey, probably all heard the news. Like, this is not continuing. Like, this is pretty much it. We're the last film in this failed DCEU franchise or attempt at a franchise. And so I feel like that dude then gave like a little bit of a, not a pump up speech, but a like, hey, so let's just go out there and have fun. Like, there's no stress. There's no worries about this because there's no pressure on it. Like, trying to save the DCEU. Like, we're donezo. So, I mean, I guess you could mail it in and phone it in if you want, but let's just have fun. If you're going to do that, at least have fun doing it. You know, and then maybe that like lifted some kind of weight off the shoulders of the cast. And they were just like, all right, fuck it. Let's just get cheesy, corny, and make it fun. So, but man, I just, and I think I've said this before, but any movie that's set underwater where you have to have people talk is just not going to look right. I think I said it about the Little Mermaid, the live action Little Mermaid that just came out. It's just like, it's just not real, mate. So, like Willem Dafoe didn't return as Vulko. I mean, he's, you know, good actors and actresses, you know, it's like Nicole Kidman. I can't believe, like, I at one point I was like, I think they probably just had Nicole Kidman do her lines on a Zoom and they just took her face and put it on like a stunt double's body. Cause it's like, there's so much CGI in this movie. That it's just like, you're telling me that people, grown people, adults, watch that, the dailies or the cuts with the CGI, and we're like, mm-hmm, we're in the money. So yeah, I just, I mean, I guess the plot was all right, but yeah, it definitely felt like they were just like, you know what, we're getting paid, so we're gonna, let's just go out there and have some fun. Oof. And now there's not going to be like another DC movie until 2025, which is, I mean, I guess from a studio's perspective is like, oh, holy shit, what are we going to do? We have a whole year where we don't have some kind of huge tentpole superhero type thing coming out to, you know, keep us afloat. But I guess it probably ultimately is a good thing. So it's like, all right, let's just, you know, recalibrate, recharge, and come out guns blazing for 2025, which I just found out Superman Legacy is now Superman. I don't know that I'm really dying for Superman. You know, I've already voiced my concern and disapproval of them having multiple Batman movies and TV shows. It's just like, you know, I feel like there's going to be a lot of pressure on Gunn to produce, like, Superman has to, it can't come out and do like a, you know, 67% of critics and 54% of audience. Like, it can't be, it has to be 80% or higher audience and critics, both, for me to like really get out there and want to watch. Cause it just is, you can't burn me that. Listen, people have burned me multiple times and got away with it, but I think I'm wising up to it. So Aquaman, woo. And then finished up Foundation season two, much better than season one, as you know, reflected in the Rotten Tomatoes scores. But like, I can verify that season two, much better than season one. It was weird coming back from Dune Part Two and watching that goddamn masterpiece and then turning on Foundation and being like, oh my God, this feels like a cheesy sci-fi, the old school sci-fi TV movie type things. You know, like a public access show meets off Broadway. It just, you could, the disparity was alarm, was jarring. It was just like, oh, okay. Like, you know, not to say I didn't like it. I mean, I still loved it, you know, and the way that season two ends is just like top notch. I really love the direction that they're heading. I mean, it opened, season two opened with that day So if you're familiar, there's dawn, day, and dusk. They're all three of the same clones of the same man, Cleon the First. And so the opening scene is Day having sex with Demoiselle, who is this robot that has been around. Is the last existing robot that anyone knows of. Because I guess there were robot wars. It's based on a book. Foundation, the series, is based on a book by Isaac Asimov, who I didn't realize wrote iRobot. He wrote that in 1950. Ooh, baby. And then he wrote Foundation in 1951. I mean, these guys, these sci-fi writers from the 50s and 60s, dude. Holy shit. So, yeah, I vaguely remember watching iRobot, the movie with Will Smith. And I don't know that it did that well. I think it was a summer blockbuster type situation. But I do remember that there were like the three rules of robotics are I will not harm a human. I will blah, blah, blah. And then like in that movie, obviously a robot goes rogue and haywire and ends up killing people. Foundation essentially is a continuation of iRobot. Cause like this Demoiselle robot, and that's what, you know, I remember seeing the credits, you know, the opening credits, the intro, every time it's like mesmerizing. It's like so satisfying. It's so nice. I never skip intro on the Foundation opening theme, but I see Isaac Asimov and it doesn't click, right? It's like, oh, that's cool. And then Demoiselle says there was like a scene where she's talking to Dusk or something, Brother Dusk, and she's saying like or he mentions it in the discussion, but like there are three rules of robotics. I shall not harm. And I was like, whoa, wait a second. What? And then that's when I realized, oh, this dude wrote iRobot. And now this, I mean, it's set way in the future, the year 10,000 something. Yeah. So Demoiselle is this, there were robot wars, right? Where the robots turned on the humans. And I guess the humans ended up defeating the robots. There wasn't much detail, I don't think, in how that all went down. And so robots were like outlawed or banned and they all had to be destroyed. And somehow she avoided getting destroyed and she was saved. So she's like the last, everyone thinks that robots are gone, except the Day, Dusk, and Dawn all know. Yeah, she's a robot. And then there are like certain people within the kingdom or empire that know. But to the general public at hand in the galaxy, like robots are not no longer. She ends up like having sex with Day. So that's like the opening scene is like him having like pretty nice sex with Demoiselle. And I was like, oh shit. Okay. And then these assassins come in to try to kill Day, the blind angels. And so you get to see him fight naked, which was a treat. This Lee Pace guy, I guess he played Ronan in Guardians of the Galaxy franchise. He's like, I'm surprised he doesn't have more press, this guy, because he's a fucking handsome dude. Like, I am a heterosexual man, but I can appreciate beauty and handsomeness in another man. This guy is handsome as hell. And the way that he handles himself, and he's like, he just looks like a fucking model. And his voice, and it's just like, I mean, dude, I got a crush on this guy. I can't help it. But the fact that they showed him, you know, and he's physically fit, just like, not jacked, but just like muscular. And even the way he walks was just like, so like, oh, this guy's cocky as fuck. And then you see him having sex and you're like, okay, that guy's got a good stroke game. And then he's about to get killed and he's fighting while nude. And he's like smiling because he's like, you know, he's that cocky. Like he's nude and he's like, I can still beat your ass. So that was like how they opened the season. I was just like, okay. Fucking A, let's do this. And you could tell, I mean, towards the end of season two, it started to get back to like what I was not too crazy about in season one, where it felt like the dialogue was just a bit like, and the acting and the delivery of the lines was a little bit but they definitely introduced more characters in season two, right? They have the general, the disgraced general who was in prison, and his husband. They have Polly, who was a child in the first season, is now all grown up, like 100 and some odd years old. So they definitely introduced more characters, and I think that ultimately benefited the series, because I wasn't like, I think there was tough sledding. Like my tolerance for like the protagonists in the first season was waning. It was just like, it felt very one note towards the end. I'm saying it as if like it's trash. It's not trash at all. It's still great viewing. I still enjoyed it, but it was like something that kind of just gnawed away at the back of my head. So season two ends with a friggin' bang, and dying to see what happens in season three. Hopefully season three happens. If not, I guess I could read the books. So yeah, I'm digging that. So that's all I got. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. I appreciate your allegiance, your patronage, your loyalty. And I hope that I was able to bring you some sort of entertainment, enlightenment, enrichment. And we'll talk to you next time. Adios, chachos.